We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Well, you know, again, too, how many UFO researchers were approaching black communities and asking them about their UFO experiences? I mean, I would guess probably not many.
Yeah.
You know, they might not have been doing it consciously. Like, I don't want to paint the image that, you know, ufologists are racist, because I don't think that's true. What I'm saying is that people have these unconscious biases that they don't even realize that they have, and it just prevents them from engaging people from other cultures.
Mm.
And you have to get over that, because the more insular your field, your discourse becomes, the smaller and smaller and smaller it gets, and the more it's just going to wither and die. And it has to be diverse. It has to be rich. And that's why, you know, somebody should just write a book about, like, you know, specifically looking at people of color and their UFO experiences. That's why I adore Artie Sixkiller's work.
Thank you, because I was waiting to sort of jump in here, because my buddy Chris Pinio on here, he said, what about Native Americans? Don't discount them. And absolutely, I agree. I mean, they have...
Yeah, Artie Sixkiller's work is very important with her stories from indigenous peoples. You know, like, that's the kind of work that we need to be doing. You know, like, that's the kind of... We need to approach
with all
other
different
cultures and get
the input.
Yeah,
with all different cultures.
Yeah, I mean, how many people have written a book about UFO contact in East Asia? You know, I'm sure people see UFOs in East Asia, but how many books have been written on it? You know, how many people have... It's something that as a community, we have to branch out, and we have to reach out to people and bring these other voices in. And that's, you know, you see it occasionally, but, you know, again, too, like, how often... Do you see these people invited to conferences, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's why I'm glad, like, Soraya has, like Where Did the Road Go? Soraya, you know, usually has, like, he has female guests. I know, like, Keith, the Demon House guy in Seattle, he's a person of color, so it was very refreshing to hear him on. I think in the cryptid community, you see a little bit of it as well. But it's something that we've all got to work on, you know?
Yeah, for sure, you know. And it's like I said, I mean, it's worth discussing. I don't think it's something that people should be, you know, we come from a place of, we're coming from a place of, like, of wanting inclusion, you know. We're like, hey, there's no inclusion going on here, guys. What's going on? You know, I think part of it too might be that the UFO field and the paranormal in general is, like, so marginalized that there's no, like, no one's talking about this, and there's no public sort of pressure to be inclusive. You know what I'm saying? It's like, sports and that kind of thing. I mean, shit, look at sports. There's not even, like, any openly gay athletes, like, any of us. I think there may be one in each of the sports or something like that. But it's insanely like closeted. So it's like that's mainstream
that
sports.
Out the NFL,
so can you imagine? Like no one gives a fuck about ufology. So there's no there's no one like, you know, So there's no like external social pressure where it's like, hey, what? Let's take a look at what's going on internally here.
Yeah, and the whole MUFON response to that scandal is, I mean, deeply disappointing. You know, because we've just on a purely like research-oriented level, right? You can't ever expect to be able to find any answers or to broaden our knowledge of this phenomena if we're just talking to the same people.
Yeah.
You know, we have to get as many data points as possible. I mean, if this phenomena expresses itself based on cultural context, we have to get reports from other cultures, you know? Like, we have to expand that pool of data as big as we can. We can't be scared of talking about these kind of things.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why we need more young people in this field, because they're more...
It is, yeah.
You know, I'm going to sound like an old man, like you're crying hipsters or whatever, but it's like they have a different outlook on the world. So, and maybe that's why ghost hunting, since it's been adopted by so many young people, is more diverse.
Yeah, and, you know, it's important, too... I don't want to use the word, like, outreach, but, like, I don't know how to do this, but more people need to be aware that there are links between ufological phenomena, ghost phenomena, cryptids. Like, people need to realize that we're all kind of looking at the same thing.
Yeah,
that's kind of back to what we were talking about, sort of this cultural undercurrent that people like you and me and other people are kind of in. We know that, but other people just never realize that. If you point it out to them, they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, most people aren't hostile to that idea. You know, you kind of explain a little bit, like, where you come up with that idea, and it makes sense to a lot of people. It made sense to me. And, you know, you do see, I think, more young people in the occult space. Like, I do think we're kind of in the beginnings of an occult renaissance in the world. And, you know, you've got, like, Mike sort of binding rituals that he's putting on Twitter and everything, and I think you're seeing more of it. It's just that we have to be welcoming as a community as well, you know, and having racist rants on Facebook is not a way to welcome in people to your community or make them feel safe or comfortable to come forward with their stories or even participate in the discourse, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not really, like, I was almost more critical because I made a joke initially when the first comments were posted that it was like, oh, you're telling me like an old white guy in an old prominent ufologist is like racist, like this. Call me when something interesting, like a new. Call me when that's news, you know.
Yeah.
But then it was like their response was so, you know, it was like Charlottesville. Yeah, it was like this. They were ahead of the game. They were like, there's trouble on both sides. It's like, what?
You know, it also. Yeah. It also doesn't help too that the ufological community is so deeply entwined with sort of like conspiracy. This is largely the fault of like kind of the disclosure type community,
especially nowadays.
Deeply
entwined,
for sure. Yeah,
yeah.
It's deeply entwined with the conspiratorial sort of communities that have just blown up in the last year or two, because of people like Alex Jones and, you know, like, I'm sorry, but the vast majority of people who are really into Alex Jones are not exactly the kind of people I would want to have as friends. You know? So it's like, as like a leftist and as, you know, a person who's kind of into the more, you know, social justice kind of aspect of things, most of those people are not friendly to my ideas.
Right, right.
And, you know, in a lot of ways, even I feel kind of marginalized. You know, I'm glad I found people, you know, that I've been talking to people on Twitter, like Jack and you guys, because you guys all feel pretty open. You know, I don't think any of you have, you know, a swastika in your bedroom or anything.
Nah,
so,
man.
But I mean, think about the average person looking at, you know, like UFOs. Isn't that the, like, a whole Alex Jones, like, right wing?
Right.
Thing?
Yeah. I never thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right in a sense where it's not even just like, it's just the perception of the field that, it's for conspiracy kooks. And then by in turn,
exactly,
you make the leap from conspiracy kooks to your first thought is Alex Jones. So it's like, even,
exactly,
I'm like the antithesis of all of his ideas and beliefs. So it's like, to me, yeah, I shake my fist at the guy. I'm like, oh, this guy's too much, you know?
Yeah, I mean, think how much that scares people away from becoming involved in the ufological community.
Right.
Because they're like, oh, man, UFO people, those are like the same kind of people. I mean, I've even had normies, like I used before, like normal people talk to me. They're like, I'm into UFOs. And they're like, oh, yeah, you mean like Alex Jones, like conspiracy stuff? And I'm like, nah,
that's
not
horrifying.
Really.
It's horrifying to hear, yeah.
Yeah. But that's what they think. Like that, you know, and then we're in bad company, I guess. And we have to show people and be that not all of us are like that. That there are people in this community that want diversity. They want inclusion. They want, you know, good people to be involved in this, because it's something that I think has deep meaning and deep ramifications for humanity and just consciousness. I mean, this whole thing ties so much into just the human being, just how we exist in the world, our place in the universe. And, you know, I want everyone to be a part of that. You know, I don't want it to be the boys' club.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. It's like I was thinking about just now you say that, yeah, like that's kind of how I was trying to explain it almost to Steve Berg last week, in a sense, where it's like, to me, this is the biggest mystery. You know, the paranormal is, what else would I be interested in? Like, this is the earth-shattering,
exactly.
Like, you know, upending ideas, or whatever they may be, Bigfoot, UFOs, all that stuff.
I can't imagine being, like, really into stamps or, you know, something like that. It's like, no, this is my thing, and this is my thing for a reason. Because
right.
These are the big questions that have the potential to just completely throw our world, you know, on its head.
Yeah, because, like, I've interviewed hundreds of people, and if just one of them is, like, got it absolutely right, the world is a much crazier place than we can imagine. So,
yeah.
One can only hope. But, yeah, I mean, there's no sense in, like, belaboring the point. I think we kind of made it, you know, that it's. I think it's a topic worth discussing, you know, and I hope other people in other shows and areas pursue this line of thought and don't be afraid to, you know, to explore it because it needs to be talked about. And, I would love to hear from listeners who are, you know, people of color or gay or whatever, you know, that – mm-hmm. we're talking about the thing that, you know, maybe they don't care. Maybe they think it's great. Maybe they know, maybe they understand. Maybe they're like, finally, someone said what irritates me so much about ufology. It's like, call me. Don't call me. email me or Facebook me and be like, hey man, thank you for saying that, you know, not to kiss my ass or kiss Ren's ass, but just so we know that we're not just being idiots here.
Yeah, it's just, and it's something that, you know,
because I'm sure,
not
like, some people are like, oh, these guys, they're being alarmist. It's like, man, you know, I don't think we are, but, you know, back us up, folks.
And I think the vast majority of people involved in the community are good people deep down inside. I'm asking people maybe just to step back and think, you know, do I have biases that I'm just not aware of? You know, just, it's not like I'm asking people to change drastically or to, like, hate themselves or anything. I don't want people to feel guilty of anything. I just, you know, just kind of examine yourself, you know? Just say, hey, am I doing what I can to make this an inclusive, welcoming place to new people?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because it's like sort of that thing where it's like, oh, the government's covering up the UFO. It's like, you know, if anything, it's like it's a systemic issue that's been ingrained in ufology that's not, and the paranormal, you know, across the board, relatively speaking. You know, it's not like that there is a cabal of people, MUFON excluded, that are actively sort of trying to create this environment. It's just a systemic thing, I think, I hope. But, yeah. So
it's
tell me about...
change, you know, it's something that we can move forward with.
Yeah, like I said, it's a topic... worthy of discussion, I think, and one that I, you know, we explored it a long time ago on the show, but if it wasn't for this conversation I had in Portland, I probably wouldn't be talking about it tonight, but it was like, it just struck me because I went to a UFO festival the first day and a crypto conference the next, and it was like, I was like studying the demographics of both events, and I was like, I noticed that across the board it was that way, and I was like, that's very... interesting, and I had thought about that before, so let me revisit this. So tell me about your thoughts on Bigfoot, because you have some – I think it was like your first post on the thing, because I'm like an old-school Bigfoot fan. I like Bigfoot in a sense where it's not like UFOs. You got maybe five possible options for Bigfoot, I hope.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like 30 with UFOs. But I thought it was interesting because it was – your blog post is really fascinating in a sense because it's like I could feel you, or at least I sensed that you were like working through your thoughts on Bigfoot. It was like, I'm going to sit down and put my thoughts on Bigfoot. And kind of like, it was like, it could be this. And then you kind of like, well, you know, present almost arguing against yourself. I thought it was really interesting. But, you know, what are your thoughts on this odd little creature or big creature?
Well, I constantly kind of go back and forth my own ideas on this. They've evolved over the years. I mean, in my blog post specifically, I kind of go over two possible scenarios that are not mutually exclusive, right? They could both be true, that there is a physical flesh and blood animal creature, possibly like cousin to humanity, like, you know, maybe they're more related to us than we realize, that live alongside us and have existed alongside us for a long time, and that maybe we've just driven to the brink of extinction. And that, you know, I sort of kind of examine some possibilities for the physical kind of answer and think, okay, well, maybe they live underground. Maybe they live in cave systems, and that the only ones that people see are, you know, they're out for some reason that they're not supposed to be. You know, maybe they're, you know, people, it took Jane Goodall, I think, almost a year before she finally saw a chimp, you know. These things could be that elusive. You know, I do kind of understand the argument that why have we never seen one or never gotten a body ever? Like, yeah, that makes sense. But then again, too, how many times have you come across a body of anything in the woods?
Right,
typically,
right.
The woods recycle things pretty fast. I mean,
well, I was
going to
say, because I was not necessarily anticipating the argument from you, but I was anticipating sort of that idea, and to take it to a level that is different in a sense. But, I mean, I don't know what it's like where you live, but when I drive it late at night sometimes, on very, very super, like, maybe three times in my life, a deer has, like, dashed out into the road. And it's like, that's a deer. We know what deer are and stuff. And it's only ran onto the road, like, three times in the thousands of times I've been out driving. So if you reduce, pull the camera back, reduce the population of deer to what you would expect the Bigfoot to be, then it would kind of make sense that, like, very, very, even more impetuously rarely would people see a Bigfoot just come running across the road or anything like that. Or see one, you know
exactly,
what I'm saying?
Exactly, you know. Maybe they just are really, really, really rare. And maybe they're really, really, really smart, too. You know, people assume, okay, they think, like, oh, well, they're, northeastern mountain gorilla. But maybe they're as intelligent as we are. Maybe they have, I mean, if you listen to the Sierra sounds or whatever, it sounds like they have language. So maybe they're just like us. I mean, they're just like some offshoot of Cro-Magnon or Neanderthal or something that are really intelligent, that don't want to be found, that live in small groups. Maybe they're migratory and stuff. And I mean, they have a physicality to them that you hear in a lot of reports that don't necessarily play into the idea that they're just, you know, forest poltergeists. But then, on the other hand, there are a lot of accounts of them just vanishing into thin air. There are accounts of them acting almost like spirits or ghosts, you know? And I wonder if it isn't a mix of both. Like, I think the idea that they're physical and extra-dimensional at the same time, that is a little much of a leap for me. I tend to think maybe, on one hand, you have some physical creatures that are occasionally encountered, but are very intelligent, don't want to be found, they're very elusive. On the other hand, you have what is effectively, how do I explain this? Like, you know how the idea that UFOs and other sort of paranormal phenomena shape themselves around cultural memory or archetypes?
Right, right.
Maybe the hairy hominid is an archetype that, like, we genetically remember from when we used to be in, like, more regular contact with them, before they were almost, you know, driven to the brink of extinction. I mean, we know that we used to have, you know, we genocided the Neanderthals, right? Like, we ate most of them, and we had sex with some of them. But we killed them off. I think that there used to be kind of a rich ecosystem of sort of, you know, all these different variants of humans, right? There were Neanderthals. There were probably others, too.
Yeah, like all over the world.
We're just the ones that came out on top. You know, we're the ones that eventually won. And we probably have these sort of genetic memories of these things that kind of lurk in our collective unconscious. I mean, how many little kids, when they think about a monster, they think about a big hairy monster?
Right.
I mean, it's just like a common archetypal image of, like, the boogeyman or something. Because these things might have used to eat us, you know? Maybe they used to kill us, and that's why we killed them off. You know, I mean, the Native Americans have stories of, you know,
they have fabulous Bigfoot stories.
Yeah, coming down into the villages, stealing children, like, you know, they were threatening to them. You know, maybe that's why we've driven to extinction. Maybe that's why they're so elusive, the physical ones, because we they're scared of us now because we killed almost all of them.
Mm.
Now,
yeah.
On the other hand, maybe what some people are seeing is a sort of paranormal phenomena that is manifesting itself and building itself out of that cultural memory. And that's where you get the anomalous sort of Bigfoot encounters. Mm. Maybe that's the more common one. You know, maybe that's what most people are seeing, because so many times they also exhibit kind of poltergeist phenomena. Like, people never tend to think about poltergeist phenomena in the woods versus poltergeist phenomena in your house being effectively the same. You hear knocking on walls.
Ah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
You get things thrown at you in the house. You get things thrown at you in the woods. And so many people are like, yeah, I encountered a Bigfoot in the woods, and then I went home, and they followed me home, and they were slapping on the walls in my house and stuff. You know, if they hadn't seen the Bigfoot, they would have thought they were having a poltergeist. So I wonder how much – I guess basically the point of my blog post is that I think there may be both things at the same time. They don't have to be one or the other, and it doesn't have to be a combination of the two either, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I've long thought that almost, like I said earlier about holding a candle for the ETH, that it's like the UFO phenomenon probably is eight different things, you know what I mean? It probably is like,
yeah.
Ball, in some instances, it is some ball lightning type thing we don't understand quite yet. And then in other instances, it is interdimensional, and other times it actually is an alien like probe coming here,
yeah,
from another planet or something.
Yeah, I tend to like, over the last couple of years, I've started to shy away from the idea of there being a paranormal theory of everything, you know, and I'm like, maybe there's a lot of things going on, and just, you know, that's why you have to approach every sort of report you read and every bit of information you get from a phenomenological point of view. You have to look at just the event. You can't project your own expectations or your own theories onto it, because, you know, if you do that, well, yeah, you're going to see it as all the same thing, or you're going to see it as whatever you believe it's supposed to be. You know, and maybe the ETH isn't right, but maybe it's right some of the times. Maybe it is alien sometimes, you know, and maybe sometimes it's, you know, the astrally projecting spirits of extra dimensional beings. And maybe sometimes it's, you know, a physical Bigfoot. Maybe sometimes it's a wood ghost, you know. It can be a lot of things. It doesn't all have to be the same grand theory.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's the mistake made by the individual fields, in a sense. They all get caught up in this sort of like, in the quest to find the ultimate answer, they make the mistake of like excluding all the other answers when there is some universal, I don't know, you know what I mean? Where it's like they,
yeah,
it's hard to sort of put into words, but it's like they want to pin it down on one thing and they, and
yeah,
in turn, they can't explain it because there's all this different things happening. Like I've likened the whole paranormal thing to like clouds. It's like there's different clouds. They look different. There's different conditions that cause the different clouds. But, you know, before we studied that, we had no idea what it was. And I think the paranormal makes a mistake of being like, this cloud is, you know, there has to be one explanation for all of these, you know, for the clouds, even though they all look differently.
Well,
like, it's, no, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. We all want to, like, you know, go pull down Great Oz's curtain and see who's standing behind it. I mean, that's like a natural human inclination. And, you know, people can't be faulted for that. But you have to realize that there isn't necessarily one answer for everything. And that by trying to fit everything into the same mold, you might be missing things. It's okay to draw parallels between different types of phenomena. I mean, that's fine. Like, you need to compare them to kind of parse them out and get information about them. There's nothing wrong with drawing comparisons, but you also have to look at them on their own merits too.
Right.
Because if you know, if you put them all into one forest, you're going to miss the trees.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the stories about, well, I mean, it's like common knowledge to people who are ardent students of ufology, you know, like a group like, not to pick on MUFON more than we need to, but, you know, that they would like throw out the humanoid or the, you know, the entity cases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and APRO was, like, different. They would look at the entity cases. So it's...
Yeah, I honestly can't think of anything more intellectually dishonest than that. Whenever I hear stories about researchers doing that, it makes me so mad. Because I'm like, how many good, interesting data points could I have pulled from stuff that they like molded to fit their narrative.
Right, right. I mean, and the abduction field gets a rightfully, in a sense, gets a bad rap because they're guilty of that in a big way because they sort of constructed this narrative of alien abductions, and so many good mm-hmm. things got thrown out that like probably would be a lot more helpful in trying to figure this out.
Yeah, I mean, especially too. I know other people have talked about this more than I have, but the use of hypnosis in abduction research is especially egregious in this
right, right.
Like instance, because you're taking people who might have had a different story. You're not asking people what they saw. You've got people who are not trained hypnotists, that are not trained psychologists, and they're feeding narratives to people and possibly causing people like mental harm by their need for the phenomena to fit their preconceived notions of what it should be, you know, like literally messing with people's heads. And
yeah, because you're giving them the idea that they were abducted by aliens possibly when that's not
yeah.
maybe what happened.
That's why, you know, that's why I really, really like Whitley Strieber's work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people have a lot of opinions on Strieber, but the fact that he was like, yeah, I saw my, you know, I saw a dead person, like a ghost of a person while I was having an abduction experience. The fact that he didn't leave stuff like that out speaks volumes about him, and it speaks volumes about the experience itself and what may lie at the heart of it. Because how many, you know, quote-unquote abduction researchers would be told something like that and would just leave it out of their reports, you know?
Yeah.
Because it didn't fit or it was too weird, you know? Like that whole need for science to take them seriously, you know? Like, oh, well, we can't have it too weird because then people will just laugh at it and won't take it seriously. I'm like, I don't give a fuck if people take it seriously. I want to know what happened. I don't care how weird it is. Like,
give
it to me, you know? Like, let me know. Because that every little detail is important. And something this strange and something this out there, every little detail could be a key, you know? And if you're leaving anything out because it doesn't fit your narrative of what it should be, or you're worried about being respectable, or you're, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You're losing out. And you're doing a disservice to yourself, and you're doing a disservice to the research, you know?
Yeah. It's. Can you go past the hour, man? We're getting close to the thing. So, how much wiggle room do you have? Can we just keep jamming for a bit?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. Because I'm sure people are digging the conversation. Here's sort of a jumping off point in a sense. There you go. Well, where can actually? Let me ask you this, because this is. I don't know if we're gonna have time. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. You mentioned on the blog, plug the blog again, but you mentioned that you're working on a book about the intersection between ufology and the occult. So what's going on with that?
Yeah. Well, I'm still kind of doing research on that. Part of my actual like working with some of this stuff is research in itself. And I'm just trying to kind of draw some parallels between the channeling of spirits and sort of the contactee experience. And just sort of looking at this thing is maybe people tapping into the same phenomena throughout the ages.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of look at it from the perspective that that all of this is kind of tied together, not in the sense of a grand theory, but just in the sense that it's just taken different forms throughout the years.
And what's your – so you're just kind of like gathering the intel right now.
Yeah, basically. Like, you know, I'm looking at grimoires. I'm looking at accounts of spirit contact – like, you know, there's the really famous little anecdote in Passport to Magonia where I think it's like Lucius Flavin or somebody, like, you know, does this ritual to contact the aerial spirits, and then these, like, guys appear, and they're, like, it's almost like a UFO experience because they're, like, Space Brother type of guys. They tell him all this, like, weird sci-fi stuff, like, about how the universe is, like, created moment to moment, like a, you know, kind of like a quantum mechanics thing. And this is written in something, you know, like the 1600s. So it's like, you know, like people have always been kind of having these contacts with these entities that are not us. And I'm interested in the fact that, well, you've got their phone book. You can dial them up. Anybody can talk to them. You know, you can call them. You can call a UFO, basically.
Right.
You know, you can speak to an alien. You know, it's like, the idea of that is fascinating to me. You know, I sort of want to look at sort of the work of, you know, Greer and other people and their whole, like, going out in the desert and, like, calling down the UFOs kind of thing, because that's, in a way, I see a reflection of that in the occult, you know. It's got a different trapping, but it's sort of the same thing. It's sort of the similar idea that if you say these words and you do this thing and you're in this place, then these things will come and talk to you.
Mm.
You know, whether you're doing it with a magic book or you're doing it with a flashlight, you know, like... You know, what are these things? Why do they talk to us? Like, what do they say now versus what they said then?
That's interesting. Have you ever thought about this? Because I have not. And it just came into my head while you were talking, and I was listening to what you had to say. And thinking about what we've talked about earlier tonight. And also, this is like the most convoluted question. And also, my conversation with Mark O'Connell a few weeks ago, talking about how, like, at the end of the 1800s, there was articles and stuff being written by astronomers, real mainstream astronomers, saying that, you know, essentially speculating on life on other planets. And I guess the gist of the question, the gist of sort of the thought experiment is. Like, why, or maybe, when they sent, when they could start looking out into the stars, and they sent these probes to Mars, and they sent, things to the moon, and they established, sorry, conspiracy people, but this is the narrative that was handed down to us, they established that they found proof that we are alone. And up until then, through all of human history, it was like you could look up into the stars and think that there were people up there. There are people on the moon. I mean, I'm sure people thought there were people on the moon for a long, long time. But but maybe there was some kind of, like, social, cultural crisis, an internal crisis, where it was like, this is it. We are alone. There aren't canals on Mars. There isn't ancient civilizations, at least as obviously ancient civilizations. Like, we are the only game in town. That's, you know. So to me, I wonder, like I said, this just popped into my head talking to you, but it's like, I wonder if there was something, you know, that clicked in the human mind, in the zeitgeist, that were like, there really was a sea change of belief, in a sense.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, because, I mean, quite literally, I mean, you're right. People did used to think, oh, well, yeah, there probably are people on Venus, you know. There probably are people on Mars, and, you know, we could go meet them. I mean, we didn't know about space then, and yeah, we didn't really understand why that might not be possible. And with our sort of explorations under the solar system so far, we haven't found any evidence for that, and or at least, you know, anything living.
Right.
And... yeah, I mean, who knows what kind of psychic damage that did to our
species.
Yeah, like, to our view of our place in the universe.
Right.
Because suddenly it would be like all of a sudden all of your neighbors just disappeared.
Yeah.
It is disenchanting. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It suddenly makes everything feel a lot more nihilistic and lonely. And I think that's why you still have the... That's why you have that strong adherence to the ETH, I think. That's why you still have people who believe in aliens, because they don't want to accept the fact that, yeah, we might be the only game in town.
Right, right. We joked about it earlier, and I'm hopeful that it really is a face on Mars, but it's like that makes you wonder in a sense, like, is that where the face on Mars came from? Is it more just like that we were so desperate not to believe that there was no one on Mars – that we were like, hold the phone, I found a face. You know, is that like
I mean,
what happened?
Be. I mean, yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, you know, that's interesting. I've thought about that. And in Mac Toney's book on Mars, After the Martian Apocalypse, he kind of dances around this idea that the face on Mars looks like a human face for a reason. Because, I don't know, this is kind of an out there idea. But what if we made the face on Mars? And I don't mean like we were ancient Martians and we came here to Earth, but what if like you mentioned, sort of the desire for there to be something there manifested that, you know, like.
Well, in a sense, yeah. I mean, like pareidolia, like the first time a face appeared, that was, mm-hmm. you know, we jumped all over it. We were like, hold the phone, man. I found a face. Turns out, you know, we may not be alone. There's a face there. So,
yeah.
but everyone else, I mean, everyone else is like, dude, let it go.
What if something put the face there? What if it wasn't Martians that put the face there? What if somebody put the face there because they knew we would find it? Like,
yes,
as
possible.
Sort of like, I don't know, like a trail of breadcrumbs.
Right, right, like a clue, where it was like, yep, there's, yeah, exactly, the complete opposite of that idea, yeah, where it's like, yep, there's a face, surprise.
Yeah.
Like, we left a face
like,
here for you.
What if it's there,
once you can look,
specifically
see
so
it.
We could see it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what if it was there specifically so we would see it?
Right.
You know, like a, I don't know, like a distress signal almost, you know, or maybe, like I said, like a trail of breadcrumbs. What if it's like a map in a way, you know, that's saying, hey, humans, there's something interesting in this area. You should look a little closer, you know?
Yeah. I'd like to see.
Like, I mean, there's.
Go ahead.
No, this it's a fascinating idea to think about because it reminds me of stuff like in like 2001, A Space Odyssey, where, you know, this. You know, extra-dimensional alien race, hyper-advanced, kind of like leaves these little monoliths all around the solar system, kind of leading us, you know, to Jupiter, where they sort of had the Stargate and everything. So the idea that this, you know, some kind of civilization may leave us clues in the solar system as a way to get us to leave our planet.
Right.
You know, to get us out there.
Yeah, I'd like to see a book or something. I told Mark O'Connell he should write more because there was a period there, like at the end of the 1800s, where like in the New York Times and stuff, it was like, leading astronomers suspect there's probably a race of people on Mars. And it was like, what? This was in the New York Times? So I'd like to know more about like that, how long people have, because somebody on Greg Bishop's Rey Mysterioso page on Facebook asked the question of like, when did the ETH even start? Like, how long have people been talking about aliens from outer space, like people from other planets coming here and stuff? I would like to know how long that's been around. You know what I mean?
Well, in the occult sense, it's been around since the beginning of, like, basically magical systems. I mean, in a very literal sense, people have always known the quote-unquote spirits were from the stars.
Right, right.
I mean, even if it's just a consequence of the fact that, you know, back then, before there was all this light pollution, you know, you could look up at night and just see the immensity of the universe and all these stars and like wondering, what are those lights? You know, like, are those souls? Are those spirits? You know, they would see planets and they would think, you know, that there's a reason there's, you know,
right, right,
they
yeah.
named the planets after the gods, you know, because on some level, from a magical perspective, we've always known that there were things out there in the stars that came to here that we could talk to that didn't live here but lived out there.
Yeah.
And that belief, I think, sort of shifts into the idea of, well, maybe they're like us and maybe they have a culture and a civilization and they live on this planet, sort of like us. But from the, like I said, from the perspective that thinking of like what's out there, we've always known that there were intelligences outside of our planet.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to circle back to that idea from earlier. Yeah, it's interesting to think, again, I'd like to see, I'd have to go back and, because I think Mark O'Connell kind of got this point across like in one sentence in the book where it was like everything, you know, everything changed or something like that, where it was like once they knew, I would like to know if, where the timelines crossed in a sense, where it's like, did we find out there wasn't life on all these other worlds and then all of a sudden the UFO phenomenon cropped up? Because that would actually explain a lot on a very deep psychological level, where it's like, because now it's, I mean, even though we it's marginalized and it's kind of a joke, like there are serious scientists and mainstream scientists coming around now to this idea in a very nerdy scientific way of like finding alien life in the universe. It's like, once we found out we were alone, the quest became like, we can't be alone. We refuse to believe. We're going through the stages of grief. We're like, there's got to be.
We're going through denial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where it's like, no. Just because they didn't find them on Mars. Now they're coming here in ships. Don't worry. We're definitely not alone. It's like, I think there may be like a psychological component to this that is worth exploring.
I mean, you're going back to the Jungian angle. What if our manifestation of spacemen is a response to that, the psychic trauma caused by the knowledge that we are alone in the solar system?
Yeah.
You know, what if we're making our spacemen because we don't want to be alone? We're in denial as a species, you know?
Yeah. I think.
I mean, that loneliness. It's almost like how a lonely kid will create an imaginary friend. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, an imaginary friend. Yeah, it's like maybe UFOs and spirits and demons and angels. Maybe they're just our imaginary friends.
Yeah.
You know, like we made them because we're so lonely that we can't imagine a world or a universe that's just us.
It's interesting to think about. And this idea never crossed my mind before, until tonight. But it's like there's something worth thinking about there because – We did up until that point when we could actually like send probes and shit out, like it was always the possibility.
Yeah.
And now it's like, dude, you know, we talk all for years about finding proof of aliens. Like the only proof we have is the proof that we're alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Scary.
Which, you know, maybe that'll change. Like I you know, as far as Mars is concerned, I have a strong suspicion that there might actually still be life on Mars. Just subterranean life.
Like intelligent life, though, or like worms and amoebas?
I mean, maybe. Who knows? I mean, how are we, you know, we're gauging intelligence based on us as humans. I mean, you know, maybe it's an intelligence that we don't even recognize as such. You know, we didn't even realize until recently that, you know, trees are intelligent in a way that is alien to us, but can be considered conscious, you know, like how trees communicate with each other. They have neural networks. You know, maybe it's like, and if you look at, especially Mac Tony's book, he shows these pictures and these areas of Mars where it looks like there are trees growing.
Yeah.
You know, like, and there's certain, you know, and Arthur C. Clarke was a big proponent of that and was like trying to get NASA to investigate that. He's like, look at these. It looks like banyan trees. Like, why are you guys not paying attention to this? And there's areas on the ice that looks like mold. It's like these big tendrily looking things that are living on the ice. And it's like, there could still be biological life on Mars. Maybe it's just things like mosses or, you know, trees or lichens.
Yeah.
But I think maybe underground, where it's protected from the radiation, where, you know, the temperature's probably more stable, there might be liquid water, you know. Maybe there are thriving Martian oceans just below the surface, you know, full of weirdo
fish,
you know, Martian cave fish and spiders.
Yeah,
cause, and stuff.
They they send like submarines and shit into like the most dangerous, you know, lava pitty subterranean oceans here, and they find creatures and stuff.
I mean, if you flew a
crazy
drone
creatures
over Death Valley, you know, you probably wouldn't see any living creatures. But does it mean that there's no life in Death Valley? It just means that it's not where you can see it. It's not right there on the surface. You know, you got to go somewhere. You got to look deeper. You got to look in the holes and in the cracks. That's our best, I guess, reason for sending people to Mars is because with our current level of technology, we can't explore caverns. And,
yeah.
Because we know that there are caverns on Mars. Like, we know that there's cave systems.
Well, do you believe but in the – because you seem conspiratorial in a sense. And I guess my own – hang-ups about how lousy the space program is has made me a hopeful adherent to the secret space program, not the crazy kind, you know, with time traveling and all that, portals and everything, but like just that the government is just doing stuff that we don't know about and going to the moon and Mars. Like someone's already been to Mars, but they're not going to tell us.
Yeah.
What do you think of that whole idea?
I don't think anybody's been to Mars. There may have been more missions to the moon. I don't know. I don't think there's been anybody else to Mars or been anybody to Mars. And I tend to fall on the Mac Tony's kind of explanation about Mars. Like the reason we haven't had any manned missions is mainly because like JPL is in charge of the Mars program.
Yeah.
And JPL doesn't do manned missions. They
yeah,
work
they
with
do
drones
robots
and robotics and stuff. So if they did send a manned mission to Mars, it would be taken away from JPL, which means all that funding would be taken
it's like
away.
A political game,
so I think,
yeah.
I think it's just political. I mean, usually that's the thing. I'm conspiratorial.
I have heard
degrees,
that about the whole NASA
the
thing,
part.
Where it's like there's really two.
Yeah.
There's two NASAs. There's like the JPL side,
yeah.
And there's like the people that want manned missions. And somewhere along the way,
yeah.
You know, the manned mission guys.
Yeah.
Ironically, to bring it back to what we were talking about earlier, that it's like there's this distaste for. Mm-hmm. I wanted to articulate this better to Tyler Hochjohn on Twitter a few days ago, and you responded on there too, because mm-hmm. he posted an article about, you know, genetically manipulating people and stuff, and it's like to send it into space. And to me, it's like part of the reason why I'm super pessimistic about like real serious space advancement is there's like this distaste for people dying to try. You know, and to me, it's like if you're brave enough to do it, like you're a hero, man. Like I'm not.
Yeah.
It's your choice. You're not. Well, you know, you're not. No one's forcing you, ostensibly, I hope, presumably, to get into a space capsule and fly out to Mars. So, like this whole idea where it's like we need to figure out, you know, all this stuff about how, you know, how the body will handle it. It's like, did it? You know, when they found the New World, man, they just put people on ships and went. Like and
yeah, but
and
how
people,
many of the yeah, but the ships didn't call didn't the ships didn't cost like $1 trillion.
That's
either,
true.
So.
That's true. But you know, I think
yeah,
I think
you
know
lose
what
like
I'm saying,
one spaceship,
like,
you know.
It's
yeah,
like
yeah.
The idea like, oh, we have to be super safe with this. It's like, yes, you should be safe within reason, but we don't need people like living in a bunker on Earth for 8 months to find out what it would be like to live on Mars. Like we're really hampering ourselves with this idea that like we you know, everyone's going to have to be okay in this trip. It's like, just do it. Just do it. I'm very impatient.
I think you see the scars of the Challenger disaster and some of the other recent disasters
right,
that we've
had,
like Atlantis and stuff. Because, yeah, like, that's the thing. You used to be able to just get a rickety old ship and a bunch of guys who were probably in jail, you know,
yeah, recently in jail, yeah,
stuff,
yeah.
And throw them on a ship and be like, oh, you're going to the New World, bro. You're gonna be a colonist now. And, you know, it's fine. You didn't care if they got lost. But the astronauts are like heroes to people. You know, they're like almost like a symbol of the nation unto themselves. You know, like
oh,
they're
for sure.
Literally like the best and brightest people that we have, incredibly intelligent people. Most of them are like polymaths. You know, and you've got this incredibly, ridiculously expensive spacecraft that you're going to send them in. So I can kind of understand the caution on one hand. When they had that theoretical Mars mission, you know, the one-way trip they were talking about,
yeah.
There were something like 150,000 people that volunteered for it.
Oh, for sure,
you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I thought I had any way to get into it, I would, you know, I'd do it.
Yeah,
I'd
for sure, I would do it too.
Mars.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know.
I guess, like, if I was, like,
I think there are
emperor.
People willing to do it.
Yeah. If I was, like, emperor of the world, I would just be like, we're just going. Build the ship. Like, what, you know?
Yeah.
Ostensibly, the United States has, like, trillions of dollars they spend on defense. It's like, just build the ship, dude. Just build a ship that can fly to Mars. It can't be, you know, we know how far away it is. We know what it might take. And pack it full of people. Pack it full, you know, put, like, 36 astronauts on it and go.
Yep.
And the people that are lost, they're, like I said, they're heroes, dude. They went to go start life on Mars. Like, that to me is the frustrating part, because it's going to take just forever for them to ever do anything, you know?
The pessimistic side of me says that the U.S. is never going to do it. I mean, in a lot of ways, the U.S. is, whether or not we want to admit this to ourselves or not, it's an empire in decline.
Oh,
and
for sure, yeah.
I don't think we're ever going to muster the political will to ever do that. Now, I think it'll happen, but it's going to be a country like India, or it's going to be like China or somebody that sends the first manned mission to Mars. I think that's what you'll end up seeing. Unfortunately, I just don't think America has it in them anymore to do it. Maybe they'll prove me wrong, and I can go hoorah and hang an American flag outside my house, but you know, I don't see it happening, unfortunately. I just don't think there's the will to do it. You know, we're too busy blowing up mud huts and, you know, Afghanistan to worry about traveling to another planet or doing something that would actually inspire people, you know?
Well, if any other country, that might be like the only salvation for America beyond like a civil war or a world war. Cause I'm growing increasingly pessimistic about things in general. So I recently thought to myself, like, the only thing that's going to save this country is either a civil war or a world war. Like, we're that on the precipice of such a division. We're in the division, yeah. But we're just on the precipice of, like, the division completely becoming uglier. But what you introduce it in a way would hopefully be a peaceful alternative. If a country like China or Russia or India or any or Europe, like, put a man on Mars, I think that, like, it would almost galvanize the American public and the country.
Well, yeah,
I would hope that it would like what happened with Sputnik, back to the Mark O'Connell book. What I didn't really ever realize, because I must not have paid much attention in school, was that, you know, we were planning on sending a satellite up into space. We had, like, announced it, the United States, and it was, like, a collaborative project with other countries and stuff, and it was, like, 6 months away from happening, and then the Russians just did it. And they launched Sputnik, and everybody freaked out. And it was like, whoa, we're second-class space citizens now. Like, what is going on?
Yep.
And maybe that would happen in modern times, where it was like, India just put a man on Mars. And we'd be like, how did we not get to Mars? Like, I want all spending diverted to Mars tomorrow. Like, that would be the greatest thing that could happen to the country.
Well, you bring up a good point there in that the reason the space race happened. The reason the space race happened was because we had a rival. Because we had something. We were in a race. We had somebody else up against. A lot of people don't realize. America is the only superpower left, right? It's just us. You know, we don't have – Russia is a withering shadow of its former, you know, power. Like, China – people talk a lot about China, but they're still nowhere close to us. You know, we spend more money on our military than the next 10 countries combined. Like, we are the world's only superpower, and it's just like somebody when they get married, you know? Like, when you're a young gun, like you're dating girls and stuff, you're working out, you're trying to look good, like you're putting in the effort.
Right.
You get married, and you get lazy, and you just don't feel like really putting in the effort anymore. That's where America's at now. You know, it's just, we don't have the will to do it because we don't have anyone pushing us. We don't have any incentive to do it. You know, there's nobody else rivaling us. We got rid of all our rivals thanks to the wonderful people at the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that. It's like, to draw it in a comparison to the pop culture junkies listening today, I read an article that essentially said the same exact thing you're saying about the NFL. That was like, they were hungry and they wanted to be the only game in town, and, you know, they did whatever it took to be the preeminent sport in America, and now that they are, they're just resting on their laurels and cashing in. And it's like, that's kind of America now. That's kind of the
it is kind of
how America is now. We you know, World War II kind of like set it all up, where it's like, we're the number one and we'll outlast you guys till you go bankrupt, and we'll be the number one country. And it happened. It's like WWF or WWE. It's like, they're the only show left, so they don't even try anymore.
Yeah, it's going to take we need another great rival.
Yeah.
You know. And I mean, what rivals do we have now? You know, we're talking about going to war with North Korea. I mean, North Korea's military budget is less than the New York Police Department's budget.
Yeah.
Their entire military budget is less than the NYPD's budget. Like, it's a joke that people even take them seriously as a threat or get sucked into this, like, fear-mongering.
Well,
you know,
the fear is my only concern, I guess, with North Korea is that, like, that they're like a suicide bomber, that they're gonna like send a missile over and blow something up in Guam or some shit, knowing that we're gonna blow them up completely, and then before they do that, they're gonna blow up South Korea. That's my, I think that's the fear that most people have, because, like, you know, to just, if it was just like, oh, are we gonna go to war with North Korea? It's like, they don't stand a chance. There's not even a problem there.
Yeah.
But it's like, before we can get the chance to destroy them, they're going to kill like 3 million people in. They're holding Seoul hostage, essentially.
Yeah, and they are. That's the big thing. People don't realize that the minute we fire a shot at North Korea, they've got artillery. And it's not even nukes. They don't even need nukes.
No,
right?
They have a ton of conventional
weapons artillery pointed
at Seoul, yeah.
Yeah, like Seoul is rubble within a day. Like, you know, 8 million people in Seoul. So, like, it's not even – the thing about it is, though, like, I think that North Korea is not going to launch any sort of preemptive strike, right? They want the nukes as a deterrent. They're looking
right,
at the
right.
example of, like, the Soviet Union.
Right? Insurance
they want,
policy.
They want to – yeah, they want it. But they're not entirely wrong for – I mean, this may be kind of a hot take, but they're not entirely wrong for wanting a nuke. Because,
no,
because
any,
I mean,
aspirational, any aspirational country of ill repute that tries – you know, that grows too big for its britches, the United States takes out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely.
You know who gave up his nukes? What is his name? Gaddafi in Libya? Look
right.
what happened there. You know who also gave up their nukes? Ukraine. Ukraine gave up their nukes. They disbanded their army. They were like, because they had a whole agreement with Russia. Russia was like, yeah, we'll respect your sovereignty if you give up your nukes. And then what did Russia do to Ukraine as soon as they, like, you know, like they see these examples. So I honestly can't blame them. They're like if we don't have this deterrent, then yeah, the U.S. is going to like roll us over. They know that they're no match.
Right, right.
You know?
Exactly.
It's just that like, it's just that I'm more scared of us launching a first strike onto them like a bunch of idiots than
and then setting off
them
their,
ever doing
their,
anything.
Their dead man switch. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I mean, a lot of people act like, what's his name? Kim Il-jong or
yeah.
I remember his son's
Kim
name.
Kim Jong-un?
Yeah, Kim Jong-un. Like, a lot of people act like Kim Jong-un is like some sort of madman or crazy dictator. He's not. He's a lot smarter than his dad was. Like, he looks like a dork, but he's like a cold, calculating dude. Like, if you were following what was going on there when he first took power, he immediately, like, got rid of all of his rivals. And, like, I mean, he's not an idiot.
Right, right.
Like, he knows what he's doing. I honestly don't think he's, like, unstable. I mean, he makes all these like, grand statements, you know, on TV, like, oh, we're going to rain fire and fury and everything on the U.S. But it's just posturing.
No, that
I mean,
was our president. I said that about them.
Oh,
no.
Yeah, yeah,
well,
yeah.
That's the thing. Talk about a hot take. Yeah, I mean, that you're saying, yeah, Donald Trump seems more unstable than he does, to be honest with you, just because, like, he...
Yeah, I mean,
He seems like he has a plan or a motivation.
Yeah.
With Donald Trump, it's like, your motivation is to be liked, dude. So you're only...
Yeah,
you're
going
to bomb North
me.
Korea, like, if you think that your approval rating is too low.
Exactly. He's like... You know, he's like this senile old dude who kind of like walks around in his underwear in the White House and like watches Fox News in the morning and like stays up on Twitter all night.
Yeah.
And he's just surrounded by all these like generals, these like literal ghouls who just like are trying to get him to do stuff, you know, who are just like waiting for him. He's just going to listen to whatever they tell him to do, you know, like if they're like,
yeah,
oh, yeah,
much.
We can do it. We can totally because they're going to feed him the same line they fed people during Iraq that, oh, yeah, it's going to be. Open and shut, you know. We're gonna get in there. It's gonna be like mission accomplished, just like George Bush coming down on the aircraft, the big mission accomplished thing, like a couple of weeks after the, you know, Iraq war started. It's like it's gonna be a Pandora's box, and you know all these people, all they care about, they're all controlled by defense contractors. I mean, we just approved another $700 billion for the military. I mean. And you think, you know, people like, okay, well, we got to support the troops. Do you think the average Joe is going to see any of that $700 billion? They're not going to see it. They're still going to be using the same equipment they've been using for the past 10 years. All that money is going to go in the pockets of defense contractors and defense corporations. Like, it's none of it's going to go to the actual troops themselves. And, you know, I'm not anti-military.
Well, in a sense, it doesn't. Not like a tiny percent. I guess my only argument there would be like that of that whole thing is like that pays the salaries of everybody in the military, which is an industry. It's the
it's
the military industrial complex. Like whatever the general gets paid, like I assume they get paid once you're a general and stuff. Like I assume you have like a salary. And
no, it's a job. I mean, you get paid. Yeah.
You probably get paid pretty well.
Anyone...
So it's like, you know, 100 grand a year or something like that. If there's so many generals and all these different, you know, So I can see why that is. But then you say 700 billion, it's like just take 5 billion
yeah.
Just take 5 billion and build the ship to go to Mars. That's like how I just it's just
yeah, exactly.
Short-sighted. It's just so short-sighted. It's like should we be spending our money more wisely?
Take 10 billion of it and have single-payer healthcare in this country. You know?
Right, right.
It's like we talk about having single-payer healthcare in this country and actually taking care of people in this country like every other industrialized country in the entire world does. And you have all these like people being like, oh, how are we going to pay for it? Well, we just gave the military $700 billion. Like, we could maybe have taken a little bit of that and, you know, given people health care that they
right.
can afford. You know, it's like, it's ridiculous. And, you know, I really encourage anyone who is into, like, military stuff. Like, do you mind if I plug another podcast here?
No, I don't give a fuck.
Okay,
it's
so,
the
like,
final season, man. Plug all... These people
it's
need
not,
something
it's not a paranormal podcast. Completely
yeah.
different like kind of podcast, but it's a military podcast called Hell of a Way to Die. And
I
it's like
the title.
It's all veterans. Yeah, it's a great show. It's a bunch of veterans. They're all kind of like leftist leaning veterans. And you know, they talk about this kind of stuff. And they had a great show about how much the military wastes. Just like the money that they just flushed on the toilet when they, that they saw that they experienced when they were in Iraq.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
two of them
they,
are,
yeah, the spending is out of control in a sense where it's like they – isn't that the old
yeah.
joke where it's like they spend like $500 on a screwdriver or some shit like that where it's insane?
Yeah, that's what people don't realize. That's not a joke. That really happens. They'll spend – it's not on a single screwdriver, but they'll send them like a crate full of screwdrivers.
Right,
like,
right.
What do they need all these screwdrivers for?
You know what
like,
it reminds me of in
like,
a sense is like the pharmaceutical industry too where it's like mm-hmm. they're very similar in a way where it's like they just lavishly spend on shit that's like – They bill you, you know. It's like you need aspirin.
Yeah.
It's $10,000 for a ball of aspirin. It's like what is going on here?
Yeah.
Like this industry is so giant, it's lost control of itself.
Yeah, you see the limits of the free market, like kind of eating itself, like an Ouroboros. Like
yeah.
you know, you see that at some point, like the laws of supply and demand work, like in theory, but they don't work. But they don't work in a vacuum, you know? Like, I think I got that backwards. They only work in a vacuum, you know? Like, just because you have a pill that only, you know, maybe 100,000 people need a year doesn't mean that you should jack up the prices to $100,000 a dose.
Right, right.
You know, it's like there has to be – you know, it's a problem. I know I'm getting very, very, very socialist here, but, you know, things like the military just – people wonder why we don't have money for social programs like education and healthcare and that sort of thing. Things that would make a marked difference in the average person's life. And we look at how much we waste just on the military and all these endless wars that we get ourselves into. And, you know, you wonder why we don't have the money to go to Mars.
Right.
You know?
No, it's sad,
instead,
man.
We can
it's
take
sad,
five,
yeah.
take 5 billion of that and let's go to Mars. Let's go back to the moon. Let's build a moon base.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Christ, like, there's so many things that we could do other than be locked in endless wars all around the world and put money into the pockets of, you know, the CEOs of Raytheon, you know?
And you know what's funny, I think, is like the and I want to jump off to one more topic before I let you go, but the thing that
all right.
what you're saying is, yeah, it's just like everybody's – I mean, maybe people wouldn't care. I wish they would. I hope they would. But, like, how – cool would it be if the government just tomorrow, even though I can't stand Trump and hate him, if he was like, I'm putting $10 billion to build a ship to go to Mars. It's like, people, they need fucking hope, man. They need, like, something.
Yeah.
The country needs something to, like, get excited about beyond, like, the new Taylor
yeah.
Swift album and the Super Bowl and the start of football season and shit that we're trained to be excited about. Like, we need something.
Yeah.
We need a fucking purpose. And
yeah,
it's like we've
less
lost
people,
our way.
Yeah, we have. And unless people believe that I'm a liberal Democrat, I promise you I'm not, because this is exactly why the Democrats keep losing elections, and the reason that they're going to lose elections in perpetuity is because they have lost the ability to inspire people, to tell, like, you know, you see the Senate Democrats' Twitter account put out a thing being like, we're not going to support single-payer health care because we're going to try to fix Obamacare. And it's like, you know, when Trump says that Obamacare is falling apart, he's not wrong, you know? It's like he's
telling
the truth
about
that,
actually. No, it's got a lot of problems. I mean, they need to fix that, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, why not just tell? It's like when, you know, people were asking Hillary about $15 minimum wage, and she was telling people, well, why don't we start at $12? I mean, when did politics become the art of, like, compromising with yourself?
Yeah.
You know, you're supposed to compromise with the opposition, not sell yourself short.
It right,
doesn't
right.
inspire people.
Exactly.
It doesn't inspire people to, like, yeah, no, you can't have 15. We're going to aim for 12. You know, like, no, just tell them that you're going to do 15, and if you can't get it, then you can't get it. But you're, like, selling yourself short before you even get in the office, and it's just – it's ridiculous. I mean, that's why, you know, I'm scared as hell of 2018 because I think the Democrats are going to lose even harder than they lost last year, you know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and, I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm hopeful that, like – I'm hopeful, but – I was very disgruntled after the election, as one can imagine.
Yeah.
It was very disappointing and very frustrating because it was like, this should have been a layup, man. And they just messed it up.
Yeah, it should have been.
So badly.
They messed it up real bad.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, they messed it up.
And
yeah.
It sounds like
and,
the impression
you know,
they like tried to rig the game and then it blew up in their face where it was like, this is perfect. We're running against Donald Trump. And it was like, you don't know what you're getting yourself into, dude. He's not, you know, this guy's a fucking movement. Like you're going to face off with Bernie Sanders on steroids. Like,
yeah. And that's people like you understand this because you know about like wrestling and stuff. You and Donald Trump he's a carny, man. He's like a wrestling guy.
Yeah, he's a performer.
You know, he like understands how to work the crowd. He's a performer. And they just did not know how to fight against something like that.
And the thing is like people, friends of mine still are like, think Donald Trump's like a super genius. You know, he's playing 12-dimensional chess while everyone doesn't know what they're doing. And it's like, maybe during the election he was, dude. Like, I think that he's the ultimate, like, I think like if he could just campaign for the rest of his life, he'd be in heaven. But it's like running the fucking government, he's not, that's not what he can do, dude. He's not equipped to fucking run the government at all.
On a very basic level, he just told people what they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And the Democrats just refused to do that. You know, they refused to just tell people what they want to hear. Remember when I watched that first the first debate between Trump and Hillary, I was like, oh, shit. Like, this is going to be bad because I was like, nothing she says inspires people.
Right,
nothing she's saying, like, gets me fired up, you know? Like, like Bernie did. Bernie fired me up, but it was like, nothing she's saying fires me up. And it's like, that's, and you know, you got Trump with these.
Well, the enthusiasm gap was huge. The enthusiasm gap is like what really did in Hillary. You know, people, it was begrudging support for her. And the people who like Trump, they fucking love him. It's like, Jesus. To the point where it's like, I get that you like him, but we talked about unhealthy obsessions. It's like, there's kind of an unhealthy obsession with some people with this guy. It's like, you shouldn't like, you know, dear leader. I mean, I know there are people like who were that way with Obama, and they're just as bad, you know?
Yeah.
People who were like,
well, it's just,
thought he was their savior and everything.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's not. He's just a dude. He's just a dude who became president. Let's not, he's not going to like change the world, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's people, the big thing with Trump too, it's that he was finally allowing people to, in public, express views that they otherwise would have kept more quiet and polite society. That's
right,
the whole
right.
thing with all these like Nazis around today.
Oh,
like,
God,
when did this country, when did it become okay to be a fucking Nazi? Like, you know, when I was a kid, like, Nazis were the bad guys and everything. You didn't want to be a Nazi. You wanted to be Indiana Jones knocking out a Nazi, you know? Like,
right, right. Now there are people who are like, well, let's give the Nazis a chance to say what they have to say. It's like, what? No.
Yeah. Let's hear both sides. Yeah, the one side, you know, wants everybody to have a house over their head and food in their plate. The other side wants to put, like, you know, 30% of the population in ovens. Yeah, this is a conversation that we can have. We can find a compromise here.
Yeah.
It's like, no, there's no compromise with this. Like, you know, we're not going to – it's ridiculous. And it's like, I just don't understand where it came from. Like, what drives a person? That's, you know, the one thing –
No, we talked about this last week, me and Steve Berg, where it's like there's people who are disenfranchised and, like, you know, like I hate to get classist on people, but, like, lower-class white people who just didn't get the – you know, who got squeezed out of the system.
They get ignored.
Yeah.
They got ignored by the Democrats.
And they're told that they're privileged even though their lives suck. Like that's the whole where it all came from. It's like when you're lecturing some dude who's been out of a job for like 10 years that like you have privilege. It's like he doesn't have any fucking privilege, dude. Like he's getting the screws of everybody else. Like that's the thing.
I'm telling someone
God bless him, Jim Mars. I said this, or he said this to me, or I said it to him, or we kind of mutually agreed at one point during the shows. It was like, it's not a, or I think I told him that's what I learned from reading his books. It was like, this isn't like a, even though we talked about the systemic issue in ufology, this is really, at the end of the day, the problems of the fucking planet are not like black and white or gay or straight. It's just rich and poor, man. It's just a, it's a class system, and they've really... They've bamboozled people into thinking that, like, into aspiring to be rich without realizing that they're far closer to the poor. And
that's
a great
thing.
Trick that they played on the entire fucking planet at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, welcome, Comrade Banal. welcome to the right side of history. Yeah, I mean it is. It's all class, man. It is. It's all class. You know what? Interesting thing about like race and stuff.
I've known that for a long time, bro. It's just.
Yeah.
I'll give you some sad news though. As you get older, and you get closer to being old, I'm almost old now. At some point, you're just like, well, fuck this. I'm checking out. I got to look out for me. Fuck this. You know? I'm not in my 20s anymore. I can't save the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my thing is I don't have any problem with like, money and that sort of thing. People don't realize about, like, socialism and stuff. It's like, I don't have a problem with money, man. I trade cryptocurrencies. Like, I want to be rich. Like, there's no, you know.
Oh, yeah, you dabble.
I'm saying I don't need $1 billion. Yeah, like, I don't need $1 billion. But I'd like to have a nice house. That's the thing. People don't realize how much this world has changed. People wonder why young people are so disillusioned these days. It's like used to be able to like work as a fireman and like buy a house.
About
3 times your yearly income. The average house price is like 8 times a yearly income now. It's like it's impossible now. The opportunity that used to exist for people in this country does not exist anymore, and people have not come to terms with that fact anymore. You know, like wage growth has not really increased since like the 1960s. You know, the rich have gotten richer and the poor have gotten poorer. Like income inequality in this country is just outrageous. It's outrageous that like you can work 80 hours a week in this country and can't afford a roof over your head. You know, that's
yeah,
insane.
No, for sure, yeah.
It's insanity. Like, the thing, if you work a minimum wage job and work 40 hours a week, you should be able to afford at least like a one bedroom apartment or something.
Yeah,
you know, like,
sure, fuck yeah, man.
There's no reason you shouldn't be able to like live on an income in this country. We're the richest country in the world. You know, it's like it's ridiculous. You know, people, and it kills.
My only, I guess because I'm kind of a scrappy asshole, but my only argument to that is, like, if you're working an 80-hour week job and you can't get a place over your head, you need to fucking, like, move to where you can. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, up here,
but, you know,
where I live in Massachusetts, like, to buy a house is, like, $500,000 easily. And if I go down to like, Georgia, I can buy, for $500,000, I can buy, like, a fucking mansion. So it's like, you got
to
go where
Georgia, though.
Yeah, I guess, but if you're working 80 hours a week at fucking McDonald's and you can't afford a roof over your head, it's like maybe San Francisco is not the place for you. maybe you need to think about moving to Tulsa because there you'll be able to own a house.
The big argument against that though is that not only does it cost money, a lot of money to move. I've moved a couple times in the last 4 years, and every time it put me out $3,000-$4,000, and you know, just getting hotel rooms on the way there, shipping everything, and it's like most people don't even have that much money in their savings account. You know, it's like people can't just, and people have family, you know, like if they've got grandparents and that kind of thing, like maybe they just can't up and move. It's like, it's just, if you work, then you should be able to afford like the necessity.
I agree with that. I'm just saying,
it's just
at some point you get agitated where you're like, all right, I got to make a change. Like, the system ain't working for me. I got to fucking change my end of the shit. But absolutely. No, the whole system is broken anyway for folks trying to get by. Now, before I let you go, for like 5 minutes, since you probably never talked about this on the show before, and it's the anniversary, and it ties back in a sense to what we were talking about earlier, because we were talking about the weird lack of African American folks in ufology, and someone immediately in the chat room was like, Barney Hill, and it's like, yes, Barney Hill. We all know that. Tonight is the anniversary of their abduction, quote unquote.
Oh, it is?
Yes, it's the 56th anniversary of the abduction. So, and like I said, I figure you've never talked about this on a show before, and I'm sure you've looked at it. So, what do you think? What do you think of that seminal event in UFO history? Do you think there was really an abduction going on, or something else, or what?
So, I thought of two things here. For a little while, and I still maybe think this, I thought that the Betty and Barney Hill case could have been a military abduction. And I only say this because it's really, really, really weird when you examine it on its own merits.
That was my guess of what you would say, actually. Believe it or not, I was kind of speculating on where you'd fall, and I was like, he'll probably say it was like some kind of like secret government program. So we have a connection.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you know, my ideas on this constantly shift and change, but there's a couple little elements of it that really stick out to me. Well, one is the time of the abduction. It was right in the middle of Operation Midnight Climax, which is the MKUltra project that was being run, where they were, you know, dosing people with LSD and seeing what would happen to them. It was also during the height of the Civil Rights Movement. And people don't realize how weird MKUltra was. Like, the guys working on MKUltra were sometimes taking their own medicine, and I think sometimes they just thought up experiments just for the hell of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, they would just do stuff. They were just on power trips, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they would just do weird stuff, because I don't put it beyond them to be like, let's see what happens when we do this to an interracial couple.
Mm.
Like, it just smells like something that they would do. And there's this one, if you read Fuller's, you know, Interrupted Journey, there's a really interesting part where when, like, they, you know, stop the car, because they have that initial sighting, right, where they see the things in the windows and the portholes in the craft, then it flies away, and then they're driving, and then they get pulled over on the side of the road, and this thing's, like, already on the road, right? Like, they don't see it land or whatever. There's a part where when they first mentioned the way the things look, like the quote-unquote aliens, they're just like guys in coveralls. Like, Barney thinks that they're like
Nazis.
People are,
yeah, I thought he described as Nazi.
Yeah, and like Nazis. Like, he sees like uniforms.
Right, right.
It sounds to me like he's seeing people, not aliens or whatever.
Right,
right. Or whatever. You know, and there's a part where Betty gets taken out of the car. She's like being led by her arm, and she feels like a pain in her arm or something like that. I don't have the book right in front of me, but it sounds like she's being injected with something to me. And the quote unquote alien is really like rude to her. And, you know, most of the time when these entities contact people or they have these contact experiences, they don't talk like normal people. You know, it's sort of, it's almost mystical in a way. You know, there's like a certain decorum about it. But this thing is just like, I wish I had the book in front of me so I could tell you, but he's like, hurry it up. Like, he's like, come on, we don't have all night, or said something like that.
He's a very human response in the situation,
Yeah, it's a very human response, and it's like, that sounds like somebody just annoyed at the fact that she's taking too long, and they're like, I'm, you know, freaking CIA has me out here in the middle of
you know, injecting this later
in the middle of
LSD,
the night. Yeah, it just strikes me as weird. And there's another element of it. There's a whole other abduction story of this guy who was, he was a guy in New York. He just had, like, a heart attack. He had this whole abduction experience. And the star map that was shown to Betty Hill, which doesn't make any sense in the first place, because why would there be a 2D star map?
Right.
How would a 2D star map tell you anything?
Yeah.
He was shown that same star map.
Oh, weird.
Betty and Barney Hill. Yeah, and there was this... There's this element of that story. This story was told on, like, Mysterious Universe at some point. But he like, after his whole abduction experience, he's told to, like, go see a cardiologist or, like, go see a psychologist or something after he has a heart attack.
Yeah,
he has a heart attack, and then he's told to go see a psychologist because apparently people who've just had heart attack need to talk to a psychologist, which, by the way, doesn't happen.
Weird.
But he was, like, referred to the psychologist by his doctor.
Jeez.
And this psychologist just happened to be in this giant empty warehouse building on the outskirts of New York.
What?
And he, like, goes to it. And
I
there's,
wonder
like,
if he
a
was
single
part
desk.
Of something nefarious, yeah.
There's, like, a single desk with a, you know, like a, you know, secretary there. He goes in. He goes into this little, like, classroom that they have set up in this warehouse where it's, like, literally, it looks like a classroom, he says. And there's, like, a guy in a lab coat there who doesn't ask him any psychological questions. He just asks him a bunch of questions about his abduction. And he's,
Jesus.
Like, really weirded out by the whole thing. So, you know, he leaves. He's escorted out. He gets really weirded out by the whole thing. He's like, what the hell was that? And the next day he tries to go back, and sure enough, the place is all boarded up. You know,
oh,
everybody's
God.
Vacated. And it's like, that smells like some MKUltra stuff to me.
Yeah, that's weird.
Like, that's...
Yeah, there's an element
yeah.
to the case that makes me think that it was like some kind of military operation.
Yeah.
You know, and it was so foreign to Betty and Barney that they would like... The thing that trips people up, I think, or trips me up, is the... hypnosis parts. The guy didn't, you know, he wasn't one of these fly-by-night abduction investigators who's like, so what do the aliens look like? You know, he actually got the shit out of them, and they were talking about aliens. So it's like, okay, so...
Yeah.
But then when you look back at the whole hypnosis thing, if your idea is to, like, throw out the hypnosis and look at it from a completely detached perspective, the My Lab idea definitely... is, to me, more tenable, I guess. But who knows?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if they were like, you know, wigged out on LSD, who knows what these people looked like to them.
Right,
you know,
right.
And it's sort of like, and they were also, hypnotic recall does not mean it's accurate, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, exactly.
Hypnotic recall is just what their impressions were. So it doesn't, just because someone has hypnotic regression doesn't mean that what they're remembering is accurate. That's why it's not admissible in court, you know? It doesn't,
right,
it's
right.
just, it's like you're asking somebody what their dream was, you know? Like,
exactly.
It doesn't mean they're going to remember it exactly. People don't even remember things exactly anyway. And it's even why witness testimony is, like, suspect in court cases. And the other thing is, I'm going to say, yeah, like, do you remember that episode of The X-Files, like Jose Chung's From Outer Space?
Oh, no, I don't. I've never seen The X-Files.
Oh, my God, Ken.
I know. People would always give me shit about that. Yeah, I don't watch The X-Files. I never got into it.
Okay, well, there's exactly one episode of The X-Files that you should watch. I won't tell you to go watch the whole series, but there's one episode. it's the best X-Files episode. It's called Jose Chung's From Outer Space, and it's basically a whole piss take on ufology and, like, you know, like, alien abduction videos and the Men in Black. It's, like, a very humorous, like, funny episode. And it's making fun of a lot of stuff. And one of the kind of plot elements of that episode is that the U.S. military has been abducting people in, like, you know, conventional craft with pilots dressed up like gray aliens.
That makes sense, yeah.
And then, like, you know, doing hypnosis and, like, kind of MKUltra stuff on them to make them think they've been abducted by aliens when really they were just running medical experiments on them. And that, you know, who knows? Maybe they had costumes. You know, maybe that's why they saw aliens.
Oh, yeah,
maybe
for sure, yeah,
like,
yeah.
People in costumes.
Yeah, because she was like, oh, look, he looked like a guy. He looked like a Nazi at first. Then he was like, dude, put your mask on. You know?
Yeah.
That kind
yeah.
of thing.
You know, as someone who, you know, has dabbled in psychedelics, you know, who knows what, if you were dosed high enough and you were being presented with a set and a whole theater production, you know, something like. And, you know, we know that Air Force OSI was interested in having these sort of, you know, UFO narratives put out in the public. I mean, they probably knew. That's the whole thing about the hypnotic recall thing, right? Like, if an extraterrestrial species from another star system came here and were really running medical experiments on people and they didn't want them to remember, if they had that level of technology, I'm pretty sure that it would work.
Yeah, it's not like, yeah, yeah, it's not like,
having dreams about
it. You found
it.
A hack in our memory. Thing.
Yeah,
it's like, but you travel
yeah,
here.
It's almost like they wanted
Venus.
Them to remember.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's like they wanted them to remember, and that goes for even just traditional abduction narratives too. You know, I don't think the entities involved. I think people are abducted. I don't think that they're from outer space. Mm. but that I think the reason the so-called memory blocks or screen memories don't really work and they start slipping is because they want them to remember it.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like Soraya on Where Did the Road Go talked about the abduction experience as almost being like a ritual initiation, you know, or like a shamanic awakening where, you know, they want people to remember it. Maybe just not remember it all at once because it would be too shocking, you know.
Right.
Maybe
right.
It just trickles in at a rate that the person can analyze it.
Well, on that note, dude, we have to go because they're going to cut us off in 5 minutes. So I cannot thank you enough, Ren. I have really enjoyed the conversation. As you can tell from the fact that I've
great.
Just dragged you out here for another hour. and, you know, I give a lot of shit to the young generation because I'm old now. But, I mean, if there's more folks like you in this thing, we're going to be fine. You and my buddy Kutch and our buddy Kutch. You know, like I said at the beginning of the show, I think you're doing some thoughtful work about this stuff and actually trying new avenues to explore it, and that's all I can ask for, you know. Mm-hmm. I've always said on the show, it's like I'm a results-oriented program. If you're doing something differently, like my friends Greg and Dana Newkirk putting haunted objects under 3D scans and stuff like that, it's like try something mm-hmm. new. Just don't be the guy who writes about Rendlesham or Roswell or
yeah.
you know, all these other classic cases. It's like there's nothing to be found in those mm-hmm. things. You're talking about stuff yeah. like Jack Bender summoning a demon and then you summoning a demon. And I'm going to try and get into this stuff. I really do want to do it because, like, your attitude
I'll send you
about
some stuff
how
on Twitter.
Yeah, well, your attitude about how, like, if you just do it and try it, like, something could happen. To me, it's like, well, fuck, I'll do yeah. it. You know, why not?
Yeah. At the very least, you feel silly. At the most, it could change your life. So.
Exactly. So I think I will I'll give it a try. So I'll be harassing you offline about send me something I can do to make a gnome appear in my yard or whatever. But I feel more confident than ever that ufology is going to be in good hands, and hopefully the stuff we talked about tonight didn't upset anybody, and at the same time made them fucking think, because ufology and the paranormal and stuff, we got to get out of the dark ages, man. We got to be, you know, part of this contemporary world and stop being like this underground, creepy world, you know. I mean, if comics can make it, UFOs and the paranormal can make it too. So we gotta grow up in this field, and hopefully, folks like Ryan Collier can help us grow up in a big way. So thank you, my friend, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you. It's been an honor. Everyone have a good night.
Good night, folks. All right. There you go, my friends. That was Ren Collier on Banal of America. We have like 2 minutes. Oh, my God. We talked so long. I love that guy. He is awesome. I think Ren Collier is really, really, really cool. And I think that he's somebody that we need more guys like that growing up in the world of ufology. Because I'm getting old. My buddies now are getting old. Micah Hanks, like I said, we grew up in this field. He's getting old. Greg Bishop's getting old. Paul Kimmel's getting old. We need new people coming in and spreading this strange gospel of UFOs and trying to figure it out, or at least trying to understand what the hell is going on here, man, because it is a complete mystery to me. On the next edition of this program, I have a guest in mind. I'm hoping he can be free next week, and if he is, we'll have him on the show. And that'll probably be the last of the first-time guests, and then we'll start getting to some of the less frequent but still awesome former guests on the show. And so stay tuned to Banal of America and BOA on Facebook. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening.